think, to Western readers here, it's as though the government is a progressive one and the opposition is a reactionary, backward group. The fact is that the opposition in Iran is unhappy of the political and economic situation, and this has been going on for over 25 years. And the fact that you see the religious leaders are kind of having the spotlight is because traditionally Iran has been a Muslim society, and Islam now has provided sort of a channel for expression of frustrations that are basically, as I said, political and economic. And
that's generally the average American gets that impression, that the opposition is largely based on religious opposition, that if they do have a changeover in the Iranian government, should the Shah abdicate, leave the country, become a figurehead, what have you, that things will then be pretty much taken over by a religious body.
Right.
Making it pretty much of a church state, as I understand it,
right.
Could be.
Yeah, that's the impression you get by reading the newspapers. That's not really true. Right now, you see many Western educated people that who have gone back and have joined the movement there, and they sort of show respect for the religious authority, and because they do admire them, their strength, and the fact that they're leading the movement. But as I said, the movement in itself has economic and political reasons. You know, after all, why such a thing didn't happen 5 years ago or 10 years ago? And why is it that now, at this historical point, you know, something like that is all of a sudden popping out? You know, if you look back over the events of in Iran the past 25 years, you see a lot of political rights were abolished. You know, political parties were all closed. Newspapers were all taken over by government. And economically, the government started taking over many businesses, and at the same time promising a lot of economic prosperity plans and not being able to meet those. And one of the areas that was really hard hit by the government plans was agriculture. Right now, most of the villages that used to rely on agriculture, they have been abandoned. And they have come to town, the villages have come to town.
Yes, I understand that the village population, the rural population in that country, is leaving the countryside to take the jobs that have opened up in Iranian industry.
Right.
Oil fields and other such things.
Well, no, they are actually abandoning the fields because the agriculture situation has gone down.
I see.
And right now, Western estimates is that Iran cannot survive without foreign agricultural exports. Not more than like 35 days,
Did I hear you correctly that Iran could not survive unless they had exports or imports?
Imports, I'm
imports,
sorry.
Agricultural,
yes.
Imports.
Imports, right.
That if they had no imports at all, if they were cut off suddenly and completely, they could go only for about 35 days.
35 days,
you
said. Right. Mm. And this is a country that used to export, actually, agricultural surplus, you know. So you see that economically the country has been hard hit because of the economic policies of the government. And this has caused a lot of sociological problems. Many family patterns have changed. People have left their families in the villages, come home, come in towns to look for jobs. And these are the urban unemployed that are actually part of these mass demonstrations. And, they are not really religious. They are economically frustrated people. And, of course, then there is the political intellectuals, the university-educated professors and students who politically are unhappy with the situation. You know, they see that...
Well, would you say that the Shah of Iran is hated or widely disliked?
Well, I say... he was very much feared, and now he's disliked.
Mm-hmm.
And people do not trust him. You know,
that may have been sort of a stupid appearing question, since obviously anybody who has read the papers, seen television, followed the news in the last couple of weeks can remember scenes of literally thousands or hundreds of thousands of Iranians
right.
massed in the streets shouting
right.
"Death to the Shah." So obviously they do not bear him any any great tidings of good joy, if you will,
right.
want to put it that way.
Right. And one thing else I want to add is that. Right now, these days, you hear about President Carter putting together a group of specialists, you know, like Mr. George Ball or Brzezinski, and they're trying to find a compromise solution. I tell you right now, it's not going to work. I mean, it's really obvious. Any compromise plan that is going to include the Shah is going to fail. If you know a little bit about Iranian people, you know, they put a lot of value and respect on the dead people. I mean, anybody who dies for a cause and becomes martyred carries with him a tremendous amount of respect. And in the past few months, a lot of people have been shot to death and killed for opposing the government. And you simply cannot quiet down those people by shifting a cabinet, you know, just changing a few ministers or putting a new prime minister there. I mean, they demand a lot more than just that. I think these are kind of desperate plans that I can tell you right now, they're not going to work. And
how long have you been over here, sir?
Quite a long time.
Are you over here permanently as an American citizen?
No, I'm not an American citizen. But
do you plan to go back to Iran?
I hope so. I hope I can go there and be useful. But one reason I didn't go back was because of all the corruption. You know, most of us Western educated people refused to go back because we didn't want to go and become part of that corrupt system. And compromise ourselves, you know.
And when you say corruption, in the brief time that we have between now and 10:30 in the next couple of minutes, what kind of corruption are we talking about?
We're talking about bribery, favoritism, nepotism, and, all sorts of under-the-table deals that is totally against what, we go there with ideals, you know. We have education, we want to put those in work, and then we become frustrated with all those going on. And that's why you see many Iranians refusing to go back and be part of that. And they want fundamental changes so that they can be useful to the people.
I guess it would go without saying, my friend, that if the Shah of Iran decides to leave the country, goes elsewhere, that he probably doesn't have any financial worries to speak of.
No, I don't think so. No, that's probably true.
I mean, somehow they always manage to live rather well in Switzerland or Paris or London after they have been kicked out. I mean, it's happened time
right.
and time and time
right.
again.
And one last thing I want to say is that we really need
sure.
the support of the American people for the cause, because I think it's a people's cause, you know. I think nobody in the world wants to be tortured.
And that must be upsetting to you when you see President Carter at press conferences expressing the hope and the desire that the Shah will remain in power.
Yes, I hope that would change. I hope American people would react to that and the president would change his policies and side more with the people.
Well, he has a tough situation, President Carter, because obviously he's been dealing with the Shah of Iran, the people in power over there, for a long time.
Right.
And not that it's maybe the most moral type of government, free of corruption. All of these allegations that you're making are probably true.
Right.
But it's a certain amount of stability that at least we could depend on the Shah's government being over there, and certain, you know, very, very important as far as our foreign policy is concerned.
Right. Well, you know, President Carter continues to support the Shah like this, he will have a harder time with those who will take over after the Shah.
Quite understandable. At that point, I've got to make a move and go on to other things, including the 10:30 news, but certainly it was nice talking to you.
Yeah, sure. Thank you very much.
Thank you much, and have a very, very good, prosperous 1979 ahead. Well, that 10:30 news is coming up right around the corner. Those of you who want to get on board and have a bit of conversation on this Christmas night of 1978 might well do so. 375-1200 is the number, and we have a couple of lines that are available. All right. right, we do have some lines available. 375-1200 is the number that will do it. I'm Bob Allard, back in five, following the news, right here on WWTC, Minneapolis and St. Paul.
Good evening. It's 11 degrees in the Twin Cities. I'm Ray Valdovinos. It's Monday, December 25th. The Twin City forecast calls for mostly cloudy skies and a few snow flurries tonight and Tuesday. A low tonight around zero and a high Tuesday 10 to 15 above. For Tuesday night and Wednesday, partly cloudy and continued cold with a chance of a few snow flurries. The low Tuesday night 6 below to 12 below and a high Wednesday near 10 above. Winds will be light and variable tonight and northwesterly at 10 to 15 miles per hour for tomorrow. Skies are cloudy now in the Twin Cities, the temperature 11 degrees. The Superior Grain Elevators may receive additional citations following further analysis of OSHA inspection results. According to U.S. Occupation Safety and Health Administration officials, results of tests for possible health hazards at five area grain elevators have not yet been analyzed or returned from Salt Lake City, Utah laboratories. John Lewis, area OSHA director, said the agency originally acted as a result of inspections made of the facilities about 2 months ago when five companies were cited for safety violations. A St. Paul man was shot and killed near the intersection of Selby and Dale shortly after midnight this morning. That is 19-year-old Daryl Cruz of 718 Holly Avenue. Cruz and two friends were walking around the vicinity of Selby and Dale when they encountered another group. According to St. Paul officials, an argument broke out between the two groups and Cruz was shot. The victim stumbled into a nearby bar and screamed, "I've been shot." Seconds later, he fell dead to the floor. St. Paul police say they have a suspect in custody, but the suspect says he didn't intend to shoot Cruz because he was aiming at someone else. Now that all the Christmas buying is over, WWTC asked Edie Shepherd of Dayton's what were the hot-selling items.
It's been quite a range. We have had a lot of sales of things like microwave ovens and Cuisinart food processors have been good sellers. A lot of people want those. Other gourmet cooking items, and popcorn poppers. In jewelry, we've had 14-karat gold chains and charms have been selling. Ski packages, 35-millimeter cameras. In the toy area, we've sold a lot of stuffed toys, teddy bears and that kind of thing, and the Snoopy line of toys. And in some of the little electronic games that were so popular this year were things that we couldn't really keep in stock. We anticipated good sales, but we just weren't able to get enough to fill the demand.
Edie Shepherd, spokesperson for Dayton's in Minneapolis. A logging mill owner in Ely, Minnesota, says regulations banning logging in the BWCA have forced him to shut down his company. Norm Kane said, in his words, "We used to be able to log in any direction from Ely. Now we have to go 50 to 100 miles out, and there are loggers, who are also out for that wood." The BWCA bill passed in October prohibits logging in the Million Acre Wilderness area. WWTC News Time, now 10:33. A serious truck safety problem has developed in Minnesota. Ronald Anderson, director of rates and regulations for the State Transportation Department, says truck safety is as serious and as much a problem here as anywhere in the country. Anderson said there's a lot of unregulated grain traffic, and grain haulers often carry loads far in excess of state limits. He said the trucking industry in general is pretty good, but when truckers cut regulatory corners, they endanger the public safety. The Twin Cities Yellow Cab Company reports a rash of vandalism. More from News Radio's Tom Myrie.
The cab company says seat cushions have been slashed, meters stolen, radio communications jammed, and windshields smashed. And it says its motor oil supply has been contaminated. Owner Robert Janicek thinks former disgruntled employees are to blame. He says about 12 people have either left Yellow Cab or been fired in recent months. Janicek says that at times, 35% of the Yellow Cab Company fleet has been in the repair shop. Tom Myrie, WWTC News Radio.
A public hearing in St. Paul next month will gather public opinion on a proposed policy governing the use of snowmobiles in national parks. The January 29th hearing will be one of eight scheduled in eight states. William Whalen, director of the National Park Service, says public comment is needed on a draft statement published December 7th. He said the government is seeking a policy that will allow snowmobiles in appropriate situations, but provide controls and limits to protect park environments. Duluth Public Schools and Duluth Government anticipate overpayments of nearly $600,000 in state aid next year due to improper assessments. According to the Minnesota Revenue Department, improper reporting of sales information by the Duluth City Assessor has created a 1979 overpayment of $585,000. Dennis Erno, Assistant Commissioner of the Revenue Department, said that a recent appraisal of selected Duluth residential properties showed evidence of spearing. Spearing is an improper assessment practice that inflates a ratio given to the state to determine local government and school aid funds. Erno said there would be no attempt to recover the overpayment because Duluth 1979 budgets already are set. I'm Ray Valdovinos, WWTC News Radio.
Okay, fellas, let's cue the piano player. Oh, that little jingle jangle piano and that sort of thing, bidding you welcome, bidding you back. Got another hour and a half to go here on our Christmas night edition, 1978 of TC Talk. Welcome, I'm Bob Allard. Those of you who want to join in might well do so. We've got a bunch of lines that are available. The show might well be going down the drain. Got to get those lines full, full, full. Makes me feel better. 375-1200, of course, is the number, and it's obviously an open session show this evening. Tomorrow night, talking about the restaurant business with gentlemen from 510 Groveland. If you've been there, I don't know. And with Abdul Qayyum of the Caravan Sarai, it might be a rather interesting evening tomorrow. And later on in the week, with the last show of the year coming up on Saturday on the 30th, our guest that evening for a few hours will be, happily enough, cartoonist Richard Gindon. I wonder how many people out there got that desk calendar that was designed by Mr. Gindon with cartoons on every other page. Funny, funny, funny. Well put together. Good practical gift. Priced right, too. I guess I can say that. Understand. After I mentioned it the other night, they totally sold out. Totally sold out. Dayton's doesn't have the book. I think I maybe got the last half dozen issues. I don't know. But good item. All right, 375-1200. I could use some calls. I really could. Hello?
Hello.
Yes, ma'am.
How are you, Bob?
I'm just fine.
Well, I'm not going to wish you a Merry Christmas because I don't celebrate it myself.
Well, it would still be the right thing to do.
Oh, no, it would not. If you know that you're serving, worshiping the sun god, and the sun god coming back at this time, and that they're worshiping.
And that's the way that you're basically looking at it, that this goes way, way back to the midwinter solstice, many, many, many years before Christianity.
The third century.
The
third century.
I see.
Constantine is the one that brought Christmas in.
I see.
And he brought the cross in, and Jesus was already impaled on the stake.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. Well, what I wanted to talk about, Bob, is cancer.
Cancer.
Uh-huh. I'm interested because I had cancer in three places in my body. And it took me about 4 months, but I finally dissolved it.
How did you do it?
It was all through the right eating. No junk food. What I mean in right eating is raw fresh vegetables, fresh fruits, lots of water, and most of all, grape juice is a blood purifier.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. And I was 700 on the cancer scale.
Well, what would that mean?
Well, that's a long ways from being 100.
Uh-huh.
I talked with another fellow that had it in his phosphate glands, and he was 2,000 on it.
Mm.
But at this time, he was gone through his first 4 weeks, and he was there to get more of the supplies so that he could get a cleaning out again. This is very important to get rid of the poison.
I see. Now, where did you go for this treatment?
Through some friends. Now, it's a Dr. Kelly's program.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And he's in Grapevine, Texas. He's a dentist.
Grapevine, Texas?
Uh-huh. He isn't a medical doctor. He's a dentist. But he discovered himself through his pains and aches that he had. Something was wrong. And he went to different doctors, his own, many times, and they told him it was all in his head, that he looked good, he was healthy, but he knew there was something wrong because he was so tired, his hair was graying, getting coarse, and his neck and shoulders and everything just ached him. He complained about, if you remember, when you were growing up, you had growing pains in your legs. I had this, and I know what he was talking about. Now they think that it's a rheumatic fever. But anyhow, this program, it's all on vitamins. It's the enzyme that the pancreas cannot put out to digest your food.
Mm-hmm.
And it speaks about no one should eat meat after 1 o'clock. Now, this is our custom of eating meat at night, you know, having a big meal.
Nobody should eat meat, say, after 1 o'clock in the afternoon?
Because it's too hard for the pancreas and liver to digest. It makes sense, Bob.
Well, it may make sense in your mind, and I'm not contesting it. After all, you're the patient who went through it and apparently quite happy with the results.
Right, and, you know, I feel so much better. And, you know, the first time when I went there, the lady, she cut about 3 tablespoons, measuring about 3 tablespoons of hair off in the back of my head, close to the scalp. And they sent this to Chicago to find out what minerals my body was short of,
mm-hmm.
and what minerals it was up on. So then the next thing was I was so close to being a diabetic that they thought it would be a good idea if I had a 6-hour blood test,
mm-hmm.
which I did, and it proved that I didn't have no sugar in the blood or urine, but I was way up there where I could very easily become a diabetic. Then the third test was a 24-hour urine catch. And this they sent to Philippine Islands.
Why did they have to send it to the Philippine Islands?
Well, now, they have a big cancer hospital and a heart hospital over there. And this is all through this program. Mm-hmm.
Okay, let me ask a question here before going on to other things and other calls. Obviously, you probably feel that the American Medical Association is not on the right track in cancer
now,
cure.
Well, I went to the general, and this doctor down there told mm-hmm. me that I had cancer. But she said they wanted to find out where it was. They wanted to go and get some marrow out of my bone, which I didn't think it was the right thing because some cancer travels fast after it gets air.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't go back anymore. I got a little word about this people that I went to that's got this Dr. Kelly's program, and this is a procedure that she gave me. And it was just, I'm telling you, it's just out of the world. You wouldn't believe it. Just vitamins and raw vegetables and fruits would do this.
Mm-hmm.
But it's all the enzyme.
Mm-hmm. All right. Most interesting conversation dealing with a cancer cure. I'm not contesting it. As I said earlier, you're the patient who went through it.
But now I have to watch it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And but the only way you can find that you got cancer is a protein in your urine.
I see. All right, at that point, I've got to go, and I wish you the best of the holiday season, one way or the other, as to how you're observing it.
Uh-huh.
And a good, prosperous, and above all, healthy 1979 ahead.
Well, I thank you, and you stay well, Bob.
All right, thank you much, mm-hmm. and good evening to you.
For some kids, running and jumping is only a dream. Some kids can't even walk. Shriners Hospitals for crippled children often make dreams come true. At Shriners Hospitals, the best medical attention money can buy is free. If you know a crippled kid that needs big help, call the Shriners toll-free, 800-621-1113. You don't have to be a Shriner or be connected to the Shrine in any way to help a crippled child. All you have to do is make a phone call. 800-621-1113. Shriners Hospitals don't care about their race, color, or religious belief. They just care about kids. So if you know a crippled child that may not know about the Shriners Hospitals, call the Shriners, toll-free, 800-621-1113. That's 800-621-1113.
All right, we could use some calls at 375-1200, as usually is the case on Christmas Day evening. Same thing for New Year's Day evening. Calls can be extremely slow in coming sometimes for whatever reason or reasons combination. We've been doing quite well tonight. The lines have been full a number of times. At the moment, that is not the case. We could use some calls. Let's move ahead. Hello?
You've got a call right here.
Yes, sir.
I'm calling in response to that last lady who spoke on so-called cancer care. It seems that she has gotten a bit corralled by some type of a con artist. And I think it's frightening that there is even that type of a doctor, so-called doctor, around.
Why?
Because you have a doctor who may be in it for cash, or he just may be so sold on his idea that he is not thinking scientifically. And so he puts together a little package that he thinks is a cure-all.
Yeah, what she was talking about, and I was not going to contest it for various reasons and so forth, no sense getting into that. She's happy, but, you know, as you probably are pointing out and realize, the story has a certain ring of familiarity about it.
Sure. Now, let's say this nice little lady did have cancer, and she wasn't getting treated, and it could have been stopped by conventional so-called legitimate methods. Then there would have been a lot of problems.
Yeah, that's usually what the American Medical Association, the cancer people, say about cures of this type. The Laetril thing, of course, which is prominent in the news from time to time.
Sure.
Because for some people who may have cancer in the early treatable forms and they will go the Laetril route or some other route, thereby bypassing
sure.
workable treatment.
Sure. Bob, I know a few people in the scientific community at the university. I'm not a scientist myself. But there is much, 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 much very diversified research in the area of cancer and cell biology. And there's many, many different angles being approached. And I think the scientific community is diverse enough and legitimate enough to realize that, you know, they maybe have studied Laetril or that type of thing, and they wouldn't say no for no reason.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
So,
Well, I know that the Minnesota Cancer Society has a pamphlet that they came out with about 2 years ago, about a year and a half or 2 years ago, and I think I still have a few copies, in which they come right out and say that the Laetril approach is simply, in their estimation and opinion, quackery.
But there's so many people sold on it. I mean, it seems maybe that it is a possible something they should look into, but I'm sure it has been looked into. They wouldn't.
Now, it has been looked into, but those people on the Laetril side, and in some cases, not all, but as you may be aware, in some cases, it's almost paranoiac. They feel that there's some sort of a collusion or some sort of a plot between the AMA and the government, that they really do have a cancer cure in terms of Laetril, but the doctors simply don't want that cure to be released. And, of course, it's garbage, simply because doctors and their family and their friends come down with cancer, too.
Exactly. If there was a cure, they would try to find it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a lot of rubbish. But it's interesting, we talked about Laetril. That used to be a little bit bigger news item.
Yeah, it's totally dropped out of the news lately, as far as I'm aware of. I just have not seen any items at all dealing with it.
Huh. I wonder if we've heard the end of it.
No, probably not. Probably not. It seems every 10 years or 15, every generation, there comes a new cure for some type of a disease, usually cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And quite frequently based on diet or something, not necessarily the conventional medical approach.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But it has been documented scientifically by legitimate scientists throughout the world. Proper eating is a very important function of your health.
Yeah, sure. There's no doubt, no disputing that.
No.
Incidentally, what type of professional work do you do?
I'm in sales.
I see. What are you selling?
Well, I sell copiers.
You sell what?
Copiers.
Oh, copiers. Copiers, yeah.
I think one of you have a sponsor on the station that sells copiers.
Yeah, probably do. Or do you sell one of the name brands?
Yes.
Which one?
Well, should we really talk about it?
Yeah, go ahead. I don't care.
Canon. Very fine copier. And I'm going to be legitimate here with you, and I don't know how many people are interested in copiers. And this is no sales pitch. But I happen to think that the company is a very legitimate, well-run company, and a very good value.
Mm-hmm.
The prior product is a very good value.
Let's see. Did I spot an item in the last couple of weeks, I think in Newsweek or some magazine, maybe the Wall Street Journal, about the Japanese gearing up to get into the... No, it was getting into the either copier or computer business. I can't recall which.
Yeah. Well, if they can do what they've been doing in other fields as well, if they have the same track record in other fields as they may have in computers, they're really going to be something. Because the computer technology is in the world is in America. That is where the computer technology is.
How is business this past year?
Not too bad.
Mm-hmm.
Not too bad. I can't complain. I think I did all right for myself.
Uh-huh. Good. Nice to hear that.
Hope I can get back to you again sometime.
Yeah, with that, I'll bid you adieu. Good night. Wish you the best of the Christmas season.
Good.
That be your desire. Christmas, what there is left to it. And, of course, a prosperous new year ahead.
Thank you.
Thank you much, and good night to you. 375, 1200, all right, Allard, what are you going to do now? I mean, you are flat out broke as far as calls are concerned. You have nothing to go to. They are just deserting you tonight in droves. Just deserting you in droves. Fray Valdivinos around. I think we still have a couple of those unused albums. We've got a Johnny Cash album, some Dolly Parton stuff there. And, I suppose there's no time like the present to simply give you a sample of